Imagine a world where cities run under the benign guidance of an AI. Robots plant and harvest our food, and nanotechnology performs what seem like medical miracles. People hack their own genes, connect their brains to the internet, and implant tech to experience the world in ways humans have never known. Travel and even living on other planets is no longer a fantasy, but a matter of affordability. While these scenarios seem lifted from a sci-fi novel, this technology is currently under development and holds the potential to fundamentally transform what being human means.
Welcome to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics, working in diverse fields like linguistics, technology, game and object design, and ethics. I'm your host, Craig Goldsmith.
I'm your host, Ellen Dornan.
On this program, we're talking about the book, The Five Forces That Change Everything, with author Steve Hoffman, a.k.a. Captain Hoff, the CEO of Founderspace, named one of the Forbes Top 10 Startup Accelerators. Steve is also a venture investor and serial entrepreneur.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Steve. This is just really exciting to talk about your book. Can you give us a sneak preview of what these five forces are that are poised to change everything?
This change is happening faster than most people expect. We've seen a lot of changes over the last decade or two in terms of how technology influences our lives, changes business, affects society. Well, that's nothing compared to what's coming. So what's coming are these major forces in technology that, if used properly, could make our lives much better. But if used irresponsibly, they could actually lead to a lot of problems for humans and for our culture and society. The first force is mass connectivity. And we've already seen the effect of this. When all of us became connected over the internet, it literally changed our lives and changed practically every business on the planet. What's coming next even have a more profound impact, and that is what happens when we connect our brains directly to the internet. So no longer are we communicating through these clunky little devices called smartphones, but literally our brains are melded with all the information that's in the cloud. Number two is bioconvergence. We can see this happening right before our eyes. Gene editing technology is revolutionizing medicine. They now have gene editing technology that can take a person who is blind and actually cure certain types of blindness. We are gene editing our crops in multiple ways to make them taste better, to make them survive in extreme temperatures, to ward off pests. We are even gene editing the meats we eat, and that means a lot of money for some businesses. But what does gene editing mean for the human race and our planet as we start to edit ourselves and literally change the human species? Number three is human expansionism. We all hear Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and other billionaires talking about getting humans off this planet and into outer space, whether it's the moon, Mars, or beyond. This is happening in our lifetime, and it's going to have a profound impact on humanity. What will it mean for us to colonize other planets? What resources will it take away from things we can do on our planet? And as we push further out into outer space, where will our civilization, how will it mature? We're also, at the same time, not just expanding out, but we're expanding in to the world of nanotechnology, to the tiniest particles possible, and building nanomachines that literally have the capability of reshaping our planet and the human body. Number four is deep automation, and that is where we are taking AI and robotics and literally automating everything we do in our lives, everything business does. The jobs that most people do today will not be the jobs that they do 10, 20, 30 years from now, because machines will become so adept and so smart at doing everything humans do that the machines will just do it better. We are automating our entire economies, our social processes, all of these things. AI will play an enormous role in restructuring society. And then number five is the intelligence explosion. And that is where we are on the cusp of developing AI that is so smart that it will begin to code itself, increasing its intelligence and capabilities exponentially. we will see an explosion in the capabilities of artificial intelligence to the point where artificial intelligence may look at human beings as we look at ants. It may have so much more knowledge and so much more capabilities. What will our society become at that point?
You can look at these as trends in what you're seeing from the venture capital side. That's what I'm curious about. You're not coming at this from an academic standpoint. Is what prompted you to sort of think about these things and identify these things? Because you're actually seeing real projects being funded. You're actually seeing products and or research in a practical sense that is in all of these areas.
I am seeing it all around me every day. Before the pandemic, I was traveling 70% of my time, meeting with entrepreneurs, investors, and scientists all over the globe, having these discussions, talking to them about where is this technology taking us? You know, a lot of people are making a lot of money and there's a lot of changes happening, but what in a practical level is going to happen in the next decade, 2 decades, 3 decades, and how will that impact us and our lives? And what discussions should we be having? It's not a theoretical book about academics or theories, it's a book about reality.
And projects that you're actually seeing happening and development that you're seeing.
Absolutely. So these are startups, like the Brain Computer Interfaces startups, for example. I've been working with the entrepreneurs making this technology. Brain Computer Interfaces are also being made by some of the largest corporations in the world. And I actually consulted on this exact topic. So all of this technology, whether it's AI or whatever, these are companies, CEOs, engineers, and scientists that I'm working with every day.
What surprised me about some of what you wrote about is not just the corporate investment in these technologies, but the fact that some of it, particularly the biohacking, is so accessible on an individual consumer level. You talk about how for a few $1,000s, you can set up a CRISPR editor in your garage and get to work on cuttlefish cells, and that people are really taking this into their own hands to move things in whatever direction they feel they want to go. You quote one person who said, ever since I was a kid, I've been telling people I want to be a robot. And now we can implant chips in our arms and have it move a robot arm over in another country or take things into our own hands in that way. With so many different actors, corporate and individuals, pushing these technologies, is anybody at the controls? Is anybody steering this ship? You do talk to a lot of people who voice their concerns. When you were talking with the people at MIT, they said, we believe that it's absolutely important that an everyday interface does not invade a user's private thoughts. And I thought, is that a possibility that I'm on social media and it knows what I'm thinking? And that was sort of an eye-opener.
These are the critical questions to be asking because these technologies are readily accessible. You don't have to be in a multi-million dollar or billion dollar lab to make, use, and deploy to the mass market. Anybody who codes, it's just a matter of knowledge. You don't even need to go to university. If you could teach yourself AI and you can be coding AI, and who knows if somebody in their basement isn't going to be the one to make the breakthrough to new algorithms that exponentially increase the power of AI and allow them to do things in the world that we've never seen. CRISPR, that gene editing technology, is both fascinating and terrifying because for a few $1,000s, you can set up a whole CRISPR lab. I mean, you can actually buy a gene editing kit for a couple $100s. It's that cheap. And all it takes is the knowledge of how to gene edit, and you can start to do it in your house, create new species of plants and animals. Well, is this wonderful? Many people have gene edited themselves and their friends. One guy out there, he actually injected himself with gene edited DNA to make his muscles grow faster, just like he had experimented with on frogs, getting their muscles to grow faster. I'm not telling you to do this. In fact,
don't try this at home.
Don't try it at home. It's extremely risky. He did it. He said he regretted doing it, but he did it. He live casted it, right? The whole process. And he sells the kits online. So he was making money. The free marketplace, the accessibility of this type of really cutting edge and powerful technology is wonderful because it accelerates innovation. But our government can't keep up with regulating this. Our government doesn't even understand the technology, let alone know how to regulate it. And the thing we need to be aware of is some of this can have huge implications. It might not just be injecting yourself. It might be releasing a new gene-edited virus. God forbid somebody does this at home and then a new version of COVID or some other virus comes out. What do we do then?
So part of your impetus for writing the book and thinking about these things is that a lot of what you're seeing is people come up with a process or a product or a technology. In a lot of ways, they're just looking to market it or to make a profit, which is fine, but that doesn't mean you're thinking about the broader implications of what that technology might actually mean for us. How are we actually going to think about these things and maybe coax them into a positive space rather than everything ending like every bad science fiction movie I've ever seen?
The blob is coming. Frankenstein is being born every day out there. The potential for both amateurs as well as entrepreneurs and well-established venture capital firms and corporations to abuse this technology is enormous. And to be fair, the potential for this technology to do wonderful things in our lives, cure cancer, gene editing technology can do that. Look at COVID, like this mRNA. We're fighting the virus with this technology. The technology can do enormous good. And then there are enormous risks out there. Because I've been an entrepreneur. You're under enormous pressure, financial pressure, emotional pressure. You have investors you have to deal with who have their own agenda. They want to maximize their returns. They don't want to sit around and talk about this for a year, not even 2 days. They want you to launch that product, get it to market, get revenue coming in, grow and beat out the competitors. They don't have time, energy, or a lot of times even the desire to do anything else. So you need counterbalances. What's to keep them in check? Do we have any regulations? Should we have regulations? And if so, what type of regulations? How should society view these things? Will the chance for abuse of some of the new technologies that are coming out will make Facebook look like a child's game?
If a lot of this stuff is coming out of commercial development or where an entity is trying to make a product or service or technology that's going to be for profit, you might not even know that it's being developed at all if people are under non-disclosure agreements and so forth and so on. I mean, it's not even like you always have the opportunity to weigh in on the ethical or moral considerations.
Companies out there aren't going to be shining the spotlight on what they're doing until they're ready. They don't want competitors copying them. They don't want regulators stepping in and thwarting their efforts. If you're running a company, you're going to keep it quiet until you're ready to go, and you're going to have a specific purpose. The problem is these companies aren't necessarily trying to do evil. They're not our nemesis. What they're trying to do is literally build a business and intelligently launch products. But it's not a democratic process. It's not a process that's necessarily open to debate until those products are in the marketplace, usually. Now, there are rules around the FDA and regulation and things like that. But even those rules are sometimes flouted, especially by the smaller players. They're just putting out this stuff and seeing what happens. We're living in very exciting times.
You also made the point that even if it's regulated in one country, that doesn't mean the research can't be pursued in another country. Things like human cloning that you talked about, where there are laws against it in one place, but the people who can afford to can go get their animals cloned in another country.
In countries like China, their laws are different. So they may permit human cloning. They don't right now, but actually a Chinese scientist did try it. The parents were infected with HIV and they wanted the babies to resist HIV. So they actually genetically edited those babies. And that was immoral, right? Because we don't know the repercussions. We don't know what genetic damage he was introducing to those babies. And we still don't know. The scientific community was in an uproar and China's government cracked down on it. But there are scientists now in Russia, for example, that are saying if somebody wants to create a designer baby of the future and not only change their eye color, but maybe change their intelligence or change their anatomy in certain ways, they can come to him and he'll do it. Has he done it? We don't know, but he's sort of hung his shingle up there and he has the knowledge and capability to do it. And all it takes is for one government to say it's okay. Any country could just say, okay, all the scientists who want to gene edit human babies can come here, and anybody who has the money, which will probably be the wealthy, can come here, and then they can start that business, and what can we do about it? Think about it. If one country decides to create a superhuman race, the smartest children ever, so that we can outcompete everybody else, and they make it a policy to gene edit babies for intelligence, then all the other countries in the world are suddenly face an existential choice. Do we look like Neanderthals? Like you're going to be like not able to compete with this new race of superhumans? Do we have to start gene editing just to keep up? And parents, even in your own microcosm, in your school, if all the other parents are suddenly gene editing their kids, do you want your kid to be the dumbest kid in class? You know, you may not have a choice. So we have to deal with these questions before we're put in a position where we don't have a choice.
You do make a good point about people choosing these things of their own free will. I know when you talked about some of the VR or AR technologies, I thought, well, sure, everybody wants a holodeck. We know there's a possibility you may lose your connection with the real world if you spend all your time on the holodeck, but heck, we still want one. And I think a lot of these technologies are like that, where it's going to be so appealing to hop on the bandwagon for so many people that the social pressure alone will create a push toward widespread adaptation.
What we've learned about humans is that we don't always do what's best for us. We'll do what everybody else around us is doing just because they're doing it, because we are social animals. We do not exist in a bubble. And other times, we will do stuff that's actually destructive to us, but it feels good. If you look in today's world, a lot of people would say, has your life gotten better having a smartphone? A lot of people would answer no. Yet they still walk around with smartphones. It's almost impossible to have relationships and a job in the world without a smartphone today. Even if you don't like it, you're going to adopt it. Now, what happens when the devices, let's take two examples. One is I enter a virtual world that is so compelling and so lifelike that it makes my life seem dull in comparison. But when I plug into this world, all my fantasies come true. It has emotional stimulation, physical stimulation. It's just realer than real. What will a lot of people choose? You might like to say, no, I would never do that, until maybe you experience it. People will be saying in the future, for better or worse, that the simulated lives and the simulated realities that are going to be coming our way are better than their real lives. And that to me is scary. Are we going to divorce ourselves from the mundane, cumbersome, and painful process of living a human life, the human condition, and sort of go into this state of being that is nirvana, but sugar-coated and not real? Those are questions that we have to deal with as a society and individually.
And hopefully this podcast will answer all those questions for the listeners. And when we're finished, we will have a roadmap forward so that we don't end up in the bad science fiction movie. I want to be in the good science fiction movie. Steve, thank you so much for being on with us today and talking about your forthcoming book, The Five Forces That Change Everything.
My pleasure.
And if you would like more information about Steve Hoffman and his work, you can visit CaptainHoff.com online, and that's Captain, H-O-F-F, one word, .com. Augmented Humanity is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council, produced in partnership with KUNM-FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs at nmhumanities.org. Our theme music comes courtesy James Whiten, and we've had production assistance from Tristan Klum.